Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, I'm going to have a double feature. Most of my regular listeners will realize or recognize the double billing. I'm starting off first with The Shadow, Death from the Deep. It had a few original air dates that I saw. One comic book says the 3rd of August, 1937. Another site saying the 3rd of April, 1938. And then an archive has it at the 12th of June, 1938, which would have been the auxiliary season 1A, still starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston and Agnes Moorehead as Margot Lane. We're going to go ahead and start it off. Just like to say thanks to Tufts for allowing the grand hour to continue this semester. Thank you. Anybody's listening, here we go.
Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Using advanced methods that may ultimately become available to all law enforcement agencies, Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard. As haunting to superstitious minds as a ghost. As inevitable as a guilty conscience. The Shadow's true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, Death from the Deep.
Look at the water, Captain. Calm as a mill pond. I tell you, I don't like it.
Now, Mr. McLennan, that's not good talk for a first mate. You sound like a superstitious deck swabber. If the elements feel kindly toward us, let them be.
I know, Captain, but 5 days with the sea as smooth as a skating rink is a bad omen.
Well, Mr. McLennan, perhaps we'll have a good squall tomorrow to restore your peace of mind. For myself, I'll take anything. What's that?
Sounded like the engine room.
That was more than a boiler, McLennan. Hello. Hello down there. Why don't you answer? Hello?
Captain, we've been...
Hello down there, we've been what?
Captain Jones, look there. Look at that white path on the water coming toward us. It's a torpedo.
We're not at war.
Hold fast, Captain. It's going to hit amidships.
Are all hands accounted for?
Yes, Captain.
Are all lifeboats clear?
All but this one, sir.
And lower away. Lively, Ben.
We're just getting away in time, sir.
Hey, what's that noise out of the water? Dead ahead, sir.
It's a submarine.
Submarine? So that's what did it. The blackguards?
A man coming out of the submarine patch, sir.
He's got a machine gun. He's pointing at it. Step for the love of heaven.
Acme Steamship Agency.
I wish to cancel my reservation on the Princess Marie.
But, madam, didn't you...
I'm not sailing, I tell you. Why, it'd be suicide.
But, Mr. Williams, you can ship your goods with us. Our boats are safe.
No boat is safe.
But you'd be insured.
Yes, at 4 times the usual rate. Oh, no. You can cancel my shipment.
Gentlemen of the Maritime Commission, we are confronted with a vital problem. In the past 3 months, there have been exactly 18 ships mysteriously sunk on the high seas. Ships belonging to the United States, Great Britain, Germany, Italy, Japan, in fact, every major power. This series of unexplainable marine disasters has created a panic throughout the nautical world. Passenger reservations are being canceled. Freight shipments are being withdrawn. Crews are deserting their ships. Gentlemen, something has got to be done.
Waiter, some more coffee, Margot?
Yes, please, Lamont.
Two more coffees, waiter.
Okay. Now, what were you saying, Lamont?
Just this. 3 months ago, Margot, the first ship disappeared. A few days later, a second ship was sunk. This time, the bullet-ridden bodies of the crew were found dead, afloat in their lifeboats.
Horrible.
It is. Each succeeding disaster has been increasingly horrible.
And now all shipping is at a standstill.
These atrocities could not have been brought about by international jealousies because each of the ships sunk has been owned by a company in a different country.
Well, who can be responsible?
I'm not sure. But my deduction is, it's the work of a pirate.
A pirate? But Lamont, a pirate in the 20th century?
Yes, Margot. And one more callous, more bloodthirsty than any buccaneer who ever sailed the Spanish Main.
Then why isn't he tracked down?
Because not a single person has ever survived these sinkings. Therefore, the pirate has never been seen.
He must be seen sometime.
Not if he has a submarine.
Submarine?
Yes, Margot.
But how could an individual be in possession of a submarine without it being known?
If a man were rich and clever enough, he could have a submarine built in complete secrecy.
There must be some way of finding him out.
There is. Before such a craft could be constructed, it has to be designed. There are very few expert designers of submarines in the world. In the brain of one of them, this pirate craft must have been conceived.
But Lamont, a pirate submarine sounds fantastic.
Even more fantastic, Margot, is the motive of the pirate. He's preyed on every kind of ship from the superliner to the common tramp. He can't be after booty because examination of the sunken hulls has revealed that nothing has been touched.
Why, Lamont? Why?
To find an answer to that question is a task for the Shadow.
But how would you proceed?
I've already made a few secret inquiries at the Navy Department in Washington. They told me of one chap who might be worth investigating, a Mr. Joseph Hart, a brilliant designer of naval crafts who was dishonorably discharged from his position.
Where can he be found?
I have learned that he is living all alone in a small house on an oak road. The Shadow is going to pay a call on Mr. Joseph Hart tonight.
Will you pass me that bottle, please, Benton?
Certainly.
There you are. Joseph, I'm sorry to see you indulging in liquor. It frequently loosens the tongue. Sometimes makes a man say things that he later regrets.
What do you mean?
Just this. We share a secret, Joseph. A secret which would be most unwise for either of us to divulge.
I haven't said anything. I haven't talked.
Not yet. My fear is what you might say. Your nerve is deserting you, Joseph. You must pull yourself together.
How can I pull myself together when night after night I'm tortured by the vision of a procession of helpless ships sinking down, down to the murky depths, haunted by the faces of floating corpses, tormented by...
Shut up!
I was a fool. I designed and built that submarine.
A service for which you were well paid.
Yes, with money soaked in blood. I'm responsible for the havoc and the terror that you're insane.
Don't say that, you idiot. I'm no madman, do you hear?
Why did you come here tonight, Benton?
Because, Joseph, I've been wondering of late why I permit you to live. You're becoming increasingly dangerous to my interests.
No, no.
Unless you can prove to me that our secrets are safe and that you will aid me in the future.
No, I'll never do that.
No. In that case, I feel that you ought to be my guest on the next cruise of the submarine.
I'd never come back. Is that what you mean?
Quite true. But before, shall I say, before you leave us in mid-ocean, you'll have an opportunity to see the splendid efficiency with which your creation, the submarine, operates.
No. I'd rather you kill me right now and have it over with.
And deprive you of witnessing the thrilling spectacle of my accurate marksmanship, to see them leap from the boats in terror like rats? No, no, Joseph, you can't miss seeing that.
No. I'd do anything rather than be forced to see that.
I thought you would. Maintain that attitude, Joseph, or it may be necessary for me to request that you pack your yachting clothes. A contingency which we should both deeply regret. Good night.
What am I going to do? What am I going to do?
I'll tell you what you can do, Joseph Hart.
Who's that?
There is a way to save you from the evil domination of Barry Benton.
Who are you?
I am the voice of one who has come to help you. I am the instrument of your righteous vengeance. I am the Shadow.
The Shadow?
With my assistance, You can compensate for some of the wrong that you have done.
But how?
Tell me the secret that you share with Benton.
Oh, no, no. I can't. I'm afraid.
You have more to fear if you remain silent. The Shadow already knows enough to hang you, Joseph Hart.
You haven't got anything on me.
I heard every word that passed between you and Benton in this room.
No.
Tell me what I want to know and save yourself. Or perhaps, as Benton so aptly put it, you'd prefer to pack your yachting clothes.
Nothing can save me. What I've done is done. I can never escape my conscience.
Then your conscience must tell you that it's your duty to do all that you can do to stop Vinton's outrages.
Yes, yes, yeah, you're right.
Now tell me the secret.
Very well. Until a year ago, I knew Vinton only by his reputation as a millionaire sportsman. He was famous as a deep-sea fisherman and a big-game hunter. He came to me first seeking a design for a racing boat. I built it for him, and we became friends.
And because of that friendship, you consented to build a submarine.
Yes, but not for the purpose that he later used it. He told me that he wanted for a new thrill, oh, believe me.
Go on.
The submarine was built in Vinton's private shipyard, out of Carey's Point. Knowledge of its construction was carefully guarded from the world. It was not until the day the boat was launched that he told me his true intentions.
What were those intentions?
Vinton is a lunatic, coldly, murderously mad. He'd always been a killer, but he tired of shooting lions and gaffing marlin. Now his warped brain had turned to what he regarded as a new sport.
Thinking of ships and the ruthless slaying of defenseless men. Now I understand. Why did they keep the submarine?
I don't know.
Are you telling the truth, Joseph Hart?
I've told you everything. Why should I lie now? If I knew where that boat was, I'd blow it to pieces. Myself with it. Myself with it.
Wait. Myself. That's the idea. That's how I could fool Barry Benton. Why should I wait to die at his hand? No, no.
What are you doing?
I'll fool Barry Benton.
Here, put down that gun.
No more tortured sleepless nights. I see no more screaming headlines. Another boat sunk and another.
Don't, Joseph Hart, don't.
Barry Benton will never take me on that voyage. I'll fool him, I say, fool him.
Poor Joseph Hart. You've served us both. Now we shall see whom you have served best. Barry Benton or the Shadow.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a moment the Shadow will be back on the air with surprises, suspense, and a thrilling, unexpected climax. But meanwhile, here's something mighty important to bear in mind when you drive a car. Just remember that rainy days make the grass grow greener. They may bring out the best in flowers, but they bring out the worst in roads.
Yes, beware. A road that's plenty safe when dry may become a dangerous skid trap when wet, sending your car skidding, spinning, swerving off the road.
Motorists, why take this chance when you can now get a sensational new kind of tire that will stop you quicker, safer than you've ever stopped before? The new Goodrich Safety Silvertown with the Lifesaver Tread. Impartial tests conducted by the country's largest independent testing laboratory against the regular and premium price tires of America's six largest manufacturers proved that no tire tested, regardless of price, came up to the new Silvertown in non-skid action. Furthermore, these unbiased tests showed that the new Goodrich Silvertown with Lifesaver Tread gave more non-skid mileage than any of the other tires tested in its own price range. Imagine, the new Goodrich Silvertowns average 19.1% more miles before the tires wore smooth, which is the same as saying you'll get every sixth mile free. Yes, many tires cost more than the new Goodrich Silvertowns, but no tire at any price can give you the unequaled skid protection of the Lifesaver Tread, the exclusive blowout protection of the Golden Ply. Keep danger a stranger. Put a set of these life-saving long-mileage tires on your car without delay.
And so, Margot, Hart finished telling me the story, and before I could stop, stop him, he shot himself in the head.
Poor man.
Perhaps it was better that way.
But Lamont, now how will you find the submarine?
Joseph Hart told me that it was built at Vinton Shipyard out at Carey's Point. That's the logical place to start my search.
Is that where you're going now?
Yes.
Do be careful, Lamont. Remember, that man's a lunatic. He'll stop at nothing.
The Shadow hasn't anything to fear from Vinton.
I hope you're right.
This is as far as we can safely drive without being seen.
This is a desolate spot. Don't like it. There's a light.
Yes, the shipyard.
It appears to be surrounded by a high wall. It looks like a prison.
Perhaps it is a prison for those within its gates. Margot, before we go any further, I'll give you your instructions.
Yes, Lamont.
I've already been in touch with the United States Coast Guard. They've been promised to give me full cooperation.
Yes.
Once I've found the submarine and know Vinton's plans, I shall communicate with you by our private wireless.
And then?
Then you will relay my message directly to the Coast Guard headquarters in Washington.
I understand. Good luck to the Shadow.
The Shadow thanks you.
Now.
Okay, Phil.
Well, that's the last of the torpedoes, Charlie.
Hey, the sub must be going on a long cruise this time. Taking plenty of supplies and ammunition.
Yeah. Hey, what's that?
It's the wind blowing the door shut. What's the matter with you?
Listen, Charlie, when are we going to get out of this joint? You know, we've been cooped up inside this shipyard for 3 months. It's giving me the creeps.
Oh, now, take it easy.
You'd rather be back in prison. There wasn't nothing scary about prison, and you knew when your time was up, you got out.
Maybe we ain't never going to get out of here.
Huh? What do you mean?
I mean this Vinton guy's a bug. He ain't even let us read no newspaper since we come here. The stuff about hunting whales with torpedoes, that sounds screwy to you.
Listen, if he don't let us out of here soon, I...
Here he comes now.
Are all the torpedoes aboard?
Yes, sir. We just sent down the last load.
Very well. Take care of these empty crates. Then you may turn in.
Yes, sir. Mr. Vinton?
Yes.
Well, we was wondering if...
We?
Yeah, me and Charlie here was just talking about the... how we've been in the shipyard here a long time now and...
What Phil is trying to say, Mr. Vinton, is... Well, could we have a couple of days off on the outside?
I'm afraid that would be impossible.
Oh, but Mr. Vinton, it's been 3 months. I've got a wife and kids.
You're being well paid, aren't you?
Oh, sure. You're giving us plenty of dough, all right. But we ain't getting no chance to spend it.
You will remain here as long as your services are required.
What if we don't want to stay here that long? What if we up and leave?
Yeah.
I wouldn't advise you to attempt that. You remember what happened to your associate, Mr. Hadley, when he tried to, as you say, up and leave? He fell from the wall.
You mean... You mean that wasn't no accident? Huh?
No. He was shot down.
Oh.
So, do you still want to quit? I thought so. Good night, gentlemen.
Looks like we're in here for a long, long time.
Yeah. Maybe you are. Well, I'm going to figure a way to get out of here, see?
Perhaps I can be of some assistance to you.
Who said that?
I heard it, too.
I said, perhaps I can help you if you wish to get out of here.
Who's that talking? Where are you?
Don't bother to look for me. You can't see me.
What is this? One of Vinton's gags or something?
No, I am not speaking for Vinton. I speak for myself.
Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
The Shadow? How'd you get in here?
The Shadow is everywhere.
Well, what do you want?
I wish to bargain with you.
Well, what kind of a bargain?
By this time, you must be aware that you are both at the mercy of a madman.
He's right, Charlie.
You will never leave this place alive unless Barry Vinton is brought to justice.
Well, what can we do about it?
I will promise you your freedom if you will just answer my question.
Wait a minute. What do you think, Charlie?
Well, we're taking a chance. This may be a trick.
It is no trick. You have the Shadow's word.
Well, what do you want to know?
Where is Vinton's submarine?
It's right below our feet in a secret underground berth.
When does it sail again?
Tonight, at midnight.
What is its destination?
Well, I heard Vinton say something to the mate about Cape Francis.
Good. Sailing at midnight, Cape Francis. The Shadow wishes him good hunting. Margot Lane. Calling Margot Lane. Proceed as instructed.
Communicate the following information to Coast Guard headquarters. Pirate submarine sails at midnight for waters off Cape Francis. Impress on Coast Guard the importance of the following directions implicitly if wish to bait the madman who is terrorizing the Atlantic.
Position, Mr. Brash.
We are 100 miles due east of Cape Francis, sir.
Are we in the regular shipping lane?
Yes, Mr. Brash.
Have we no visibility for clear observation?
The sun is just recent, sir.
Good. I'll take over the periscope now.
Very well, sir.
A fine day for hunting, Mr. Brash. Hello, what's this?
Have you sighted something, sir?
Take a look. See what you make of it.
There is smoke. It looks like a steamer.
Splendid. Signal the engine room. Full speed ahead.
Yes, sir.
I can see a funnel.
Full speed ahead.
This is the life. There's nothing like it. The sighting of fresh quarry on this periscope. The excitement of the chase. The spine-tingling thrill when the torpedo finds its mark. And then the climax. On deck, shooting them down with a machine gun like scurrying rats. Mr. Brown, stand by the torpedo tube. We're coming up fast.
Yes, sir. Stand by the torpedo tube.
Aye, aye, sir.
We'll cut across the bow and swing to stop it. That should give us a perfect shot.
Very good, sir.
Be prepared to rise to the surface quickly. We make a direct hit with the first torpedo.
Very good, sir. Stand by the valves and elevator.
Aye, aye, sir.
We're almost within range. Cut the half speed.
Half speed ahead.
Torpedo tubes number 1 and 2 are loaded, sir.
Torpedo tubes number 1 and 2 are loaded, sir.
Look, Brausch. It's a fine big liner.
Could we see, sir? Like that, the Orpheus.
The Orpheus.
I remember now reading of her sailing. She has a full passenger list. Several ambassadors are aboard.
Full passenger list. That sounds most promising. Number 1, 2, ready to fire.
Number 1, 2, ready to fire.
Now I'll bring her a little more to the top. A little more. There. Number 1, fire.
Number 1, fire.
Yes, it's heading straight for its height. No deflection. Should be a perfect hit. Closer. Closer. Going to hit. Now! Why, failed to explode. With a dud. Number 2-2, ready to fire.
Number 2-2, ready to fire.
Number 2, fire.
Number 2, fire.
We won't fail this time.
Yes, you will, Mr. Vinson. You've just fired another dud.
Who dared say that?
I did.
Who are you? Come out here where I can see you.
You will never see me. I am the Shadow.
Shadow, eh? I've heard of you.
The torpedo hit, but it failed to explode again.
Reload the torpedo tubes.
Aye, aye.
That would be a waste of time, Vinson. I've seen to it that all of the torpedoes are dud.
You'll regret this, Mr. Shadow. This is the one time that you've matched wits with a mind cleverer than your own. Blow out the ballast tanks for a quick rise to the surface.
Yes, sir.
I'll show you. I'll sink that boat with my deck guns.
Benton, you're a madman.
Madman, am I? Very well, I'll show you the full extent of my madness.
Deck's awash, sir.
Open the conning tower hatch. Get crew, stand by to man the guns. Aren't you coming up on deck, Shadow, to witness the kill?
I am already on deck, Vinson.
Devil plague you! How don't you get up here? Show yourself!
That is unnecessary, but never fear. I'll stay near you.
The guns are jammed, sir.
Jammed? Why, that's impossible.
I neglected to tell you, Vinson, that I rendered your guns useless.
Oh, so you think that you've outwitted me, Shadow. But you're wrong. Signal the engine room full speed ahead.
Aye, aye, sir.
Steer directly for that vessel's side.
What are you doing now, Vinson?
The prow of this submarine is equipped with a ramming device. With it, we can sink any vessel afloat without injury to us. You didn't foresee that, did you, Shadow? In a few moments, we will rip open the hull of that liner and send it to the bottom as effectively as with any torpedo. So you don't believe me?
Oh, yes, I believe you. But that liner is completely deserted. It was set adrift there by the Coast Guard. It is a veritable floating mine with enough explosives aboard to blow you to kingdom come.
You're lying.
You'll know soon enough. You haven't far to go.
Reverse engines!
Reverse engines!
Will we stop in time? We're getting closer.
No. No, we're stopping. We're not going to hit. You see, Shadow, I've outwitted you after all.
No, Vinton. You've maneuvered your submarine alongside this ship just as I planned. All right, up there, here's your men.
Hold your hands, all of you.
Who's gone?
It's a trap.
All right, get
on. It's a trap.
Yes, a trap, Barry Vinton. And this ends your reign of piracy and ruthless murder.
Very smart, aren't you, Shadow? But not as smart as you think you are.
Tell him! He's going inside the submarine!
He's closing the hatch!
Yes, they all think they're so clever. But no one can outsmart Barry Vinton. I'll go to the engine room. I'll maneuver the dive. They'll never get me. I'm master below here. Now check the valve. That's right. I'd love to hear what the Shadow is saying up there now.
He's probably saying it's no use trying to maneuver that dive, Barry Vinton.
You, how did you get here, Shadow?
Why, I merely followed you.
Show yourself, Shadow, and I'll shoot you down in your tracks.
Here I am over here in this corner. Come ahead and shoot, Mr. Vinton.
Well, Shadow? Well?
You just missed me.
Why, you...
It's deplorable, Mr. Vinton.
Who are you?
That does not matter.
Why don't you tell them who you are, you glory seeker?
I seek no glory. My reward is that ships and men can once more safely sail the seas. The Shadow's work is done.
You have been listening to a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in the Shadow magazine.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
All the characters and all the persons named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
That was Death from the Deep. I have it here as episode 19, starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston and The Shadow, and Agnes Moorehead as Miss Margot Lane. Again, there's varying original air dates. A comic book says, that just sounds funny. A comic book says the 3rd of October, 1937. Another site said the 3rd of April, 1938, and the archive has it as the 12th of June, 1938, which would have been season 1A, the summer season that they picked up before season 2 and after season 1, the summer. It might have been rebroadcasting strictly what they did for season 1A. But first, we're going to have a public service announcement from a guest.
If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. People die that way. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Thank you, live DJ. No digital George, no digital Henry this week. For the next half of the show, the program, some folks are going to be happy to hear this. I know I am. It's episode 22. It's titled Apron-Faced Sorrel, with the original air date, the 7th of February, 1954.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Later this evening, listen to the NBC Star Playhouse with one of your favorite stars. Here, Meet the Press, America's number one newsmaking program. And be sure to keep tuned for the dramatic story of communism in America on Last Man Out. It's a wonderful lineup of great programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western Territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
The 2 p.m. from Chicago wasn't more than, about 45 minutes late. That was practically a record for this time of year, what with the spring floods and all. Of course, later on in the summer, when things had dried up, it was more than likely the train had hit Rustville right on schedule. Once in a while, anyway. I climbed down from the buckboard Paul Poindexter had lent me and walked over to the platform. I guess I'd be able to recognize Clay Fenton, even though I'd never seen him before. It stood to reason that there wouldn't be more than one 16-year-old boy getting off at Rustville Station, and Clay's mother had sent along a pretty complete description. He 5'7", thin, gangly, sandy hair, and a V-shaped scar on his forehead. The train had stopped now, and the conductor lowered some iron steps. The first person to step down was a drummer, holding a big tapestry valise crammed full of samples. Behind him, there were two ladies. They didn't have any suitcases, just boxes, so I figured they'd only been as far as Fort Davidson on a shopping spree. After them, there didn't seem to be anybody else at all. Well, now I'm sure that letter had said Clay would be arriving on the 22nd. Mister.
Yep?
This is the Tuesday train, isn't it?
What date do you think it was?
Oh, I know it's Tuesday, but sometimes, I was wondering if this could be Monday's train. I mean, you're not a day late, are you?
Well, of course we're not a day late. We're right on time, practically.
Uh-huh. Well, I was supposed to meet a young fellow traveling with you, about 16.
Mr. Ponsett?
Clay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I didn't see you get off.
I was riding in the last car. It took me a couple of minutes to get my things together.
This the fellow you were looking for, mister?
That's right. Thanks very much. Buckboard's right over here, Clay. Here, let me give you a hand of that suitcase.
Oh, it's not very heavy. I can manage.
Have a good trip.
Yes, sir. Just fine.
Here, you put your bag right behind the seat here.
Okay.
You want to drive?
Huh?
Well, you can handle a buckboard, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah, well, Annie's real gentle. No sense being scared of her.
I'm not scared, Mr. Ponsett.
All right.
I'm not scared of anything.
All right, Clay.
It's just that I don't know the way to the ranch, so maybe you'd better...
I didn't think of that. Well, come on, hop aboard. All right, you all settled?
Yes, sir.
All right, Annie, come on. Let's go.
Come on, man. Come on.
That's your first trip west, isn't it, Clay?
That's right.
Yeah. Come on, man. Come on now. You know, you must have done some pretty smooth talking to persuade your ma to let you come out here all by yourself.
My coming was her idea, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, I see.
She thought, well, since I don't have any brothers and we've always lived in town, she thought maybe it would do me good to spend a summer on a ranch.
I see.
Of course, I was all for it, too.
You were, huh?
Oh, sure. Especially when I found out I was going to be staying with you. The other fellows, they sure were jealous when I told them I was going to be living with a six-shooter.
Well, we all pick up nicknames out here, Clay. Something to answer to besides your own handle. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know.
In your case, it means something,
all right. No.
Well, Mom told me not to expect you to talk very much, especially about yourself. Yeah, I guess she knows you pretty well, Mr. Ponsett.
We used to be real good friends, your Ma and Pa and me. That was when they lived up in Dakota before you were born.
Yes, sir.
Come to think of it, you look like your pa.
Well, that's what people say, but I don't remember him. Funny, the only thing I can remember is sitting on his lap and playing with his watch chain. I remember that watch chain just as clear as day, but I just can't remember him. Wonder why that is.
Oh, some things just stick with a person, I guess.
Yeah. Is it a big ranch, Mr. Ponsett, where we're going?
No, it's not true. Mr. Poindexter, he's the owner. Oh, he's got 500 head of cattle and a couple thousand acres, that's all.
It sounds pretty big to me.
That's all what you're used to, I reckon.
Yes, sir. It sure was nice of Mr. Poindexter to let me move in with you.
Oh, he was real pleased at the prospect of having an extra hand for the summer. There sure has been more than enough work for the three of us already.
You mean there's only three people on the ranch?
Well, there's four now, counting you.
Oh, I thought there'd be a whole lot more than that. I thought there'd be 10 or 15 cowboys and a cook and some men to look after the horses and...
Well, Saul Poindexter, he does the cooking himself, and Jeff takes care of the horses.
Jeff?
That's Mr. Poindexter's son. Yeah, he must be about your age, Clay. Maybe a year or two older. Not as tall, though.
Oh.
Jeff will show you the ropes. He knows all about ranching.
Oh?
Oh, I expect there's plenty of things you can show him, too, about city life. I mean.
Yes, sir. I expect so.
Yeah, you'll probably have a real good time getting acquainted. Well, here's where we turn off. Easy on you. Easy on you. Easy on you.
Well, I didn't expect you back so soon, Brent.
Yeah, that train was earlier than usual. Clay, this is Mr. Poindexter here.
How do you do, sir?
Yeah, pleased to meet you, son. Well, come on, jump down here so I can get a look at you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let's see here now. Well, not much meat on your bones. But we'll soon take care of that.
That's the bunkhouse over there, Clay. You can start getting settled while I unhitch Annie here.
All right, Mr. Ponsett.
No. Hold on a minute, Brady.
What?
Well, there's no reason why Clay can't unhitch the buckboard. This is as good a time as any for him to start learning his chores.
Oh, whatever you say, Saul. Think you can manage Clay?
I guess so.
Jeff will give you a hand. Jeff! Jeff! Where in thunder are you? Well, get out here.
I'm fixing that trailer you busted yesterday.
I don't care what you're doing. I say get out here. You think I'm hollering just to exercise my lungs?
Okay, keep your shirt on.
Fine way for a son to talk to his father. Just see that you don't follow his example, Clay.
No, sir, I won't.
Yeah, well, what's all the ruckus about? Oh, hi, Britt.
Jeff?
Yeah, it's Clay Fenton, Jeff.
Howdy. Hello.
I want you to help Clay unhitch the buckboard.
In those duds?
I've got some other clothes in my suitcase.
Like mine?
Well, not exactly.
Appears like we'll have to take Clay into town and fix him up with some Levi's and boots.
Yeah, that was better.
Well, if you don't mind getting them fancy pants all messed up.
Yeah, I don't mind.
Come on in. Easy.
Clay, I'll put your suitcase in the bunkhouse.
Thanks, Mr. Ponson.
Yeah. Seems like kind of the quiet type, Rick.
Well, this is all pretty new to him, so...
Well, he get used to it. Jeff will see to that.
Yeah, I guess he will.
Well, I better start fixing supper. I thought maybe we'd have Johnny cake tonight. How does that sound to you?
Sounds fine. Sounds fine, Saul. Well, I took Clay's things into the bunkhouse and emptied out part of a wooden footlocker so he'd have some storage space. Saul and Jeff lived up in the main house. There was room up there for me, too, but I always felt more comfortable in the bunkhouse. And besides the way Saul snored, holy smokes. You could hear it all the way down here when the wind was right. I thought about unpacking Clay's suitcase, but then I decided maybe he'd rather do it himself. Saul was right. Clay sure was a quiet type. A lot more like his mother and his father. Ted Fenton had been about as lively as they come. He's always laughing and cracking jokes. I never could figure out why he sold that general store and moved back to East, but I suppose he had his reasons. Funny how a boy can grow up and be so different from his pa. A couple minutes later, I heard Jeff shout about something.
All right, then prove it. Prove that he ain't no dude. All right, I will. You're scared around.
Well, I couldn't quite make out what Clay called back, but I sure could tell they weren't exactly hitting it off. Well, I didn't actually blame Jeff for not taking to Clay. Of course, in the city, it had been Jeff who'd been the misfit, but we weren't in the city now. Anyhow, I waited for Clay to come back into the bunkhouse, and when he didn't show up, I walked outside to see what had happened to him. He wasn't in sight, but there was something going on out in the corral behind the barn.
Right on, cowboy!
I got there just in time to see the apron-faced sorrel give a buck that sent young Clay flying clear over the corral fence. For a second, he didn't get up, either.
Britt, you see that?
Clay, hey, you all right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure he's all right.
Well, what the Sam Hill are you trying to do?
He said I was a dude, that I couldn't stay in the saddle.
You put him up to riding that sorrel, Jeff?
Nope, I gave him his pick of the ponies.
Now, you know that sorrel's a high binder. You should have warned him.
It ain't my fault if he can't tell a spooky horse when he sees one. It was his pick.
Here, Clay, you think you can stand up?
Yes, sir, I think so.
Let's see. Doesn't seem to be anything broken.
I guess I better change my trousers. They're all ripped up.
You got nobody but yourself to blame, kid. I told you didn't know the first thing about riding a pony. You should have fessed up to it instead of making such a fool of yourself.
I'll show you, Jeff. I'll show you I can ride. And I'll ride that sorrel, too. Just you wait and see.
You'd almost think he meant it, wouldn't you, Britt?
He means it.
City dude. He don't even know which side to mount.
Yeah. But that won't keep him from trying the sorrel again.
Well, if he does, he'll just get himself tossed off.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
We'll return to James Stewart as the Six Shooter in just a moment. Until recent years, misconceptions prompted a lot of people to feel that a diagnosis of heart disease was a death sentence. But today, thanks to medical science and the educational work of your Heart Association, we are learning that most people with heart disease can work and lead happy lives. This Valentine's Day is Heart Sunday. Remember to give to your local Heart Association because when you help your heart fund, you help your heart. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, Clay changed his clothes, and we all had supper. Nobody said much while we were eating, and nobody mentioned the sorrel again. I figured it was just as well to let the subject drop for the time being. And as soon as the dishes were washed, Clay and I headed for the bunkhouse. It was only 7:30, and that was half an hour before my usual bedtime, but Clay seemed pretty tired, so we turned in. I guess I must have been kind of tired myself, huh? Anyway, the first thing I knew, I dropped off. It was getting on toward dawn when I... one of the horses down the corral was sure upset about something. I turned over and I saw that Clay's bunk was empty. Clothes were gone, too. For a second, I wondered if he'd run off. Maybe he tried to go home. Then I heard him coming into the bunkhouse. His face was all wet and shiny, like he'd been working up a sweat, and there were some dark stains on his pants and shirt. And he undressed, and he put the clothes he'd been wearing in his suitcase. Then he crawled under the blanket on his cot, and he pretended to go back to sleep. He hadn't noticed that I was awake, and I didn't see any reason for starting a conversation at 4:00 in the morning, so... Besides, whatever he'd been up to, probably wasn't any of my business anyway. Must have been a good hour later. I woke up again. I was doused my face in a bowl of cold water and washed the sleep away. Clay drug himself out of bed and started to put on some trousers. I noticed they weren't the same ones he'd worn when he went out during the night. I didn't get a chance to say anything about it. Just then, Saul Poindexter came charging into the bunkhouse like a bull after a red shirt.
Good morning, Saul.
Hey. Clay, I want to talk to you.
Why, yes, sir.
What's the matter, Saul?
I've just been down to the corral. That apron-faced sorrel's been whipped half to death.
What?
His flanks are cut to shreds. So I wonder he can even stand up.
Well, now, maybe he got caught in some barbed wire.
I found the bullwhip beside the fence. It's caked up with blood.
Well, do you know anything about this, Clay?
No. No, sir, not a thing.
You're lying, you little...
Now, Saul.
Jeff told me about how the sorrel threw Clay yesterday. You knew about it, Britt. You were there.
Yeah, I was there.
Well?
I didn't do it, Mr. Ponsett.
If you didn't, who did? Me or Jeff or Britt?
I don't know.
Well, maybe if you were whipped away that pony was, maybe then you'd tell the truth, you little...
Now, easy, Saul. Easy now.
Get him out of here, Britt. Send him back home. Send him anywhere. But get him off my ranch.
You didn't whip that pony, Clay?
I told you I didn't.
Yeah, that's what you told me.
Why don't you believe me then? Just because I'm a stranger, because I'm different from the rest of you, why do you have to pick on me?
Well, there's one way to find out whether you're telling the truth or not.
What do you mean?
You said you'd ride that sorrel again. You said you'd show Jeff that you could ride him, huh?
I would, too, if they'd let me.
Well, I'll let you.
Huh?
But I sure hope for your sake you didn't whip that horse last night.
What difference would it make?
Well, horses are pretty smart animals. And when somebody's mean to them, they don't forget it. And they can be mean, too. That sorrel especially.
Oh?
The person who beat him ever tried to climb on that pony's back, well... But as long as you weren't the one, well, you haven't got anything to worry about, have you? Come on now. Let's go out the corral, huh? I told Jeff to saddle up the sorrel and bring him into the yard, and Clay stood beside me, his eyes pushed wide open, staring at that stable door. He didn't move a muscle until Jeff led the pony toward us. I could see the cuts on the animal's flanks, and he walked with a sore, unsteady gait. About 6 feet away, he stopped and flared his nostrils, and a little shiver jarred Clay's body. Then the sorrel let out a snort and reared. Clay caught his breath, and the pony sprang forward, almost tearing the reins out of Jeff's hands.
No!
Clay darted out of the way as fast as his legs could carry him. He ducked under the fence and kept running.
Well, you satisfied, Britt? You believe he done it?
Well, I was pretty certain of it all along, so...
Well, then why'd we have to go through all this rigmarole?
At least he won't have any reason to go on lying from now on. That's something.
Yeah.
I sure wish I could figure out what got into him last night.
He's mean. That's what got into him. Mean, clean through.
Well, kids aren't usually mean to animals, so...
Your friend Clay Fenton is. Take another look at my pony there, if there's any doubt in your mind.
Well, we had breakfast, Saul and Jeff and me. Then we did the morning chores. I hoped that Clay would come back of his own accord and face up to what he'd done, but by 10 o'clock, it looked like somebody'd have to go after him, so I saddled up Scar and started off. It wasn't very hard to follow Clay's tracks across the prairie, and about 30 minutes later, I caught up with him. He'd stopped to rest in the shade of a chalk boulder, and he'd been too tired to stay awake. Whoa, Scar. Whoa. Whoa, boy. Easy. Clay? Come on. Come on, Clay.
Huh? Oh.
Yeah. All right, you ready to get back to the ranch?
I can't.
Well, you'll have to come back sooner or later, even if you don't stay, even if it's just to get your things.
They know it was me that whipped that pony, don't they? When I ran off, that cinched it.
Yeah, that cinched it.
I had to whip him, Mr. Ponsett. I had to.
You did, huh?
I didn't know it would make him meaner. I thought if I beat him good, he'd be scared of me afterwards. And he'd let me ride him. I thought he'd be scared of me the way I was scared of him.
You don't know much about horses, do you, son?
I know plenty. That's why I hate them.
Oh?
It was a horse that killed my pa.
Oh, I see.
We were visiting my Uncle Jack out in the country, and pa was taking me for a horseback ride. I wasn't more than 3 years old, but he wanted me to get used to riding. And the horse threw us. Mom was watching from the front porch. She let out a scream. I told you it was funny what you remember from the time when you were a kid.
Yeah?
Well, I remember hearing Mom scream. I guess maybe it was the first time I ever heard her sound frightened. I guess that's why I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Well, afterwards... After that day, I had this mark on my forehead. I must have hit against a rock. And Pa... Well, Pa was dead. I've been scared of horses ever since. I've always hated them.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot of times folks hate what they're afraid of.
That's why Mom made me come out to this ranch. I didn't want to, but she made me. She said I had to get a hold of myself and start acting like a man. And I tried, Mr. Ponsett. I tried to ride that sorrel yesterday. You know I tried.
Yeah?
And when
yeah.
I couldn't hang on, well, I figured if I showed him who was boss, I figured then maybe he wouldn't throw me again.
Now, whipping that pony the way you did, you could have killed him, Clay.
Well, what's the difference? He's just a horse, ain't he?
Uh-huh. Well, if you can't see where it was wrong, there's no point in me standing here jawing about it. So let's just... Clay...
Yes, sir.
No, don't move. No matter what happens, just don't move.
What?
Now do what I say. Just keep sitting the way you are.
What's the matter?
There's a rattlesnake edging toward your belly. Now go on. Go on. Keep on talking. Just keep on talking like nothing's the matter. Don't try to look at him. Just go on talking.
I can't.
No, there's no reason to get scared yet now. He may shove off by we buy you and never notice you. Just keep on talking. Keep on talking now.
I can feel him on my leg.
Oh, you're imagining that, Clay. He's not even touching you.
Can't you kill him, Mr. Ponsett?
If he starts to strike, maybe I can get off a shot. But he isn't striking yet. Now, sometimes rattlers go on about their business and don't strike. Now, so you just keep sitting there. Just keep sitting there and keep talking like everything was fine. Go on, son. Now, go on. Talk. Go on. Clay did his best, but his voice sure didn't sound very strong or confident. Not that I blamed him. He was in a tough spot. And the worst of it was I just couldn't risk shooting. The snake was right between us. As long as he stayed there firing at me, I'd be sure to get a bullet into Clay. The rattler would just move off a foot or so, maybe.
He was getting nervous now. The tip of his tail jiggled and rattled back and forth. I inched my gun out of the holster, but I still couldn't fire. And the snake started to coil, and the rattle sounded even louder. And his head swung up, and his beady eyes seemed to pop out, and he was less than a foot away from Clay's arm, and he was ready to strike if Clay just so much as twitched. For a second, that rattler just hung in midair. And then he twisted, and he whipped towards Scar. And Scar reared, got out of the way. I could get off a shot now, but I didn't have to. Scar's hooves were saving me the trouble. They came down again and again and again until the rattler's body was half buried in the ground. And then Scar backed off, and the snake gave a flip of his tail, but the rattlers were broken. And there wasn't any sound. All right, Clay. Let's go.
Mr. Ponsett?
Yeah?
Why'd he do it?
What?
Your horse. Why'd he save my life?
I guess he just doesn't like rattlesnakes, that's all.
The snake wasn't bothering him. He was out of the way. What's his name, Mr. Ponsett?
Scar.
Scar?
That's right.
That's funny. I guess if I was a horse, that'd be my name.
Well,
I'd like to ask you a favor, Mr. Ponsett.
Go ahead.
Do you think that sometime, if I stay on here this summer, I mean, well, sometime could I ride him?
Well, if we're going to get back in time for dinner, we're going to both have to ride him right now. Here, come on, I'll heist you up. Come on, here. It wasn't easy for Clay. The next few weeks, especially since Saul Poindexter said if Clay was going to stay on, he'd have to look after that sorrel. Pretty smart old man, Saul. Took time, lots of time. Lots of time before that pony'd even let Clay come near him. But before long, the two of them were galloping all over the ranch from early morning till past supper. I guess maybe that apron-faced sorrel forgot the whipping Clay had given him. But I don't think Clay forgot it.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart.
Okay, that was the Six Shooter for everybody that's been pestering me about playing the Six Shooter over the summer. We finally will return to that. The original air date was the 7th of February, 1954. It was episode 22. Now, we might have some programming issues next week. If I train somebody, we might not play full radio dramas. Until then, this is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour. Wake Up Sleepyhead is next. I'm going to play out one final request from the CEO of the Grand Hour Fan Club. Thanks for listening.